Hello, listeners, and thanks for tuning in to another episode of World Forge. World Forge is a podcast by creators and for creators, where we use random prompts to invent just about anything you can imagine. Together, we'll make heroes and villains, ancient monsters and magical cities, and our hope is that we inspire all the other creators and storytellers out there listening to do the same. So, without any further ado, I'm Sam.
And I'm Piper.
And welcome to World Forge. Hello, listeners, and welcome back to our evil podcast dungeon, where there is no escape. You are our captives here for the next probably hour and a half or so.
We'll see. It's hot in our apartment. We'll see how long we can last.
Welcome back, listeners.
Hi, everybody.
Yes, we're happy to have you back again. You're not actually trapped here. You're free to go whenever you want.
Thankfully.
The toll for leaving this space is a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. But
yeah, you got to pay the troll toll.
Besides that, you're totally free to go. This week, we are talking about a really cool topic. We're going to be talking about we've talked about villains before. We've talked about heroes before. We've talked about the kinds of places that they can visit, where adventures can start. But something that we haven't talked about yet is evil secret lairs.
Yeah.
Spooky laboratories and
a good place to have a boss fight.
Exactly. Yeah. Every villain, I think, is kind of defined by their sort of base of operations. There's no good villain doesn't have a crazy laboratory at the heart of a volcano or something like that. You've got to have a weird place to do all of your nasty crimes out of. So
absolutely.
That's what we're going to be building for you this week here.
Yeah. I mean, they say mansions maketh man. So
is that what they say?
What evil mansion? What does your evil mansion say about you? Take our quiz and we'll tell you.
First off, I don't think anyone has ever said that, but I'm going to go with it anyway.
Sam, you just don't hang out in the right circles. If you knew the right evil people, they would tell you that.
That's fair
enough.
It would
be on their little welcome mat that you kind of wipe your feet on when you come into their evil lair.
Yeah, it's on your evil business card. You have to have a picture of your... It's all about the real estate.
Exactly. Play that game.
Cool. I think this is a sort of character trait that is a defining feature of most good villains, and there are a lot of really, really interesting examples of this out there. I'm really excited actually just to get in right away. I don't think we have any D&D housekeeping to take care of this week. We haven't played a game this week, so we can probably just jump right into some of our favorite examples. Piper, if you have one right off the bat that you want to start out talking about, why don't you lay it on me?
I do. Well, so as soon as we came up with this topic, the first thing that came to mind was one of our all-time faves, which is the Venture Bros.
Of course.
And the first lair that I always think of is that of the Mighty Monarch, his powerful cocoon.
The cocoon that flies around, sometimes shooting lasers, sometimes being just a big papier-mâché piece of garbage.
Sometimes dropping its entire cafeteria on top of someone's house.
Yeah, exactly.
Because they have nothing else to throw at you.
Yeah, of course. Obviously a perennial feature on this podcast. Pretty much any time we need a fun example of something that's even vaguely spy, villain, or hero related, mm-hmm. we can just pull up the Venture Brothers as an example of that, because there's so many good actual examples of these sort of tropes, but there are also really good just stupid, dumb pun, names and throwaway characters in that show that work just as well.
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. And one of the things that we've talked about a lot about what makes the Venture Bros so great, and especially the character of the Monarch, is the Monarch is so invested in this idea of classic villainy, and he often says to other people, he says, it's about the presentation. I come in here, he's like, I wear this outfit and I have this giant cocoon and I have all of my butterfly soldiers.
I give a big speech about my evil plan.
Exactly. Yeah. When it comes down to it, the real villains are these lawyers and people politicians. And he's all upset about that. He's like, no, we have to come in with our guns blazing.
But I think that's a good point, right? An evil monologue is so much more effective if it's being given in in the heart of a melting glacier, a submarine trapped in the side of a melting glacier, right as an earthquake's about to hit or something, compared to if you're in a field of wildflowers and some guy says, I'm going to murder you. You're like, Here? Really?
The setting,
of all places?
Setting sets the tone. It's very
Absolutely.
Important.
Absolutely. I think that's a great example.
I love how after he and Dr. Mrs. the Monarch move into that mansion after they've taken over, it used to be Phantom Limbs.
Yeah, they go into like a shitty New Jersey mansion or something in season 5.
Yeah, it's like a gated community where all these villains live together. Yeah.
Oh, and I thought you were talking about the janky one later.
Oh,
you're talking
no.
About the, yeah,
not the
nice
mansion
one.
That he inherits from his parents.
Yes.
The one that they move in that used to belong to Phantom Limb. I love how whenever it shows the exterior shot, you just see the cocoon like out in the backyard.
Yeah.
Like this giant thing is just there.
It's almost certainly in violation of one of their like homeowners association codes,
but
it's there anyway. Yeah.
Sergeant Hatred always flies around with his giant flying hover tank.
Yeah,
so
giant hover tank,
I feel like
yeah.
They have certain leeway to do these things.
That's certainly true. So one of my favorite things about the Venture Brothers is that it's always an homage to sort of the cheesy, silly kind of 60s and 70s. You know, it's all the like Hanna-Barbera cartoons and like James Bond and like Johnny Quest and all that stuff, and how the villains are also theatrical and over the top. And I think another property that obviously is the sort of OG example of that is James Bond.
Mm-hmm.
There isn't a James Bond villain that, you know, can be mentioned without thinking about, oh, well, they also had that one place where they strapped you to a table and shot a laser at your junk and you had to escape by reflecting the laser off of a, you know, a piece of tinfoil that was strapped to your leg or whatever, you know.
Or by seducing a lady so that she turns off the switch.
Totally, totally. There's always so many, you know, the classic obviously is the Goldfinger, the, you know, how do you expect me to get out of here? No, Mr. Bond, I expect you to die. You know, it's your lair is just another opportunity for you to monologue. And in D&D, that means it's another opportunity for you to role play. You know, if you have a silly, goofy place to be trapped in that has all kinds of weird affectations, you know, if you're like a bear themed villain or something, you've got to have big bear skins all over the walls. You've got to have all kinds of stuff that
bears sleep in caves,
like flavor to go with your character. I think a lair is just an opportunity for more of that. So
one thing that I love about doing episodes in where we create an environment or a location is, and I've talked about this a little bit before, but whenever I'm DMing, because I'm such a visual person, I feel like when you really go in depth with location, that's your opportunity to kind of set the stage, which
yes.
I love to do. So I love describing a setting in detail and trying to make my players think about, you know, how do you feel in this environment? What's the lighting like? What sounds would you hear? Because that, I think, is a good way of really getting you into the mindset. Set of being like, okay, this is a dangerous, scary place, and now I can picture it in my head and I'm ready to move forward and engage with the environment.
Absolutely. And we talk about that all the time too, about, you know, giving our players opportunities to fill out the environments that we're in and things mm-hmm. like that. The more detail you have in the space you're in, the more opportunities you have to use that stuff in combat or in role play or in conversation, you know, whatever.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I also want to talk about, so the James Bond example, I think it's a really obvious, that's kind of a throwaway example in my opinion. Anybody can think of that, obviously, but I actually want to talk about another property that I think does a really interesting job of sort of borrowing from and paying homage to the sort of goofy 60s spy era, and that is the Metal Gear Solid series. Metal Gear Solid 3 especially, which takes place during like at kind of the height of the Cold War in the 60s, where you go into Russia as like a spy and you have to invade this secret Russian base where Colonel Volgin, this big bad guy who can command the power of lightning. He's a big burly Russian guy who can,
that's awesome.
He puts bullets between his fingers. And then when he punches you, he strikes the bullets with lightning. So he punches and shoots you at the same time.
Oh my God.
And his base
that's
is this,
amazing.
You know, it's this like secret Russian science compound in the middle of the, you know, the forest somewhere in the Russian wilderness. And he's got this, you know, they're building a giant Metal Gear there, a giant like robot mech to, you know, launch nukes at America from. I think the third game especially, they walk a really fine line between poking fun at these really silly concepts and also taking them very, very seriously.
Yes.
Which is just, it's so cool.
I love that.
I think
it makes it more fun.
Yeah, it's great. Any Metal Gear Solid game has that. You know, you have Outer Heaven in the original Metal Gear Solid game, and, you know, any of the places that Big Boss inhabits in any of them, Big Shell in Metal Gear Solid 2, but I think Metal Gear Solid 3 especially captures that really well because it is very much a James Bond inspired sort of caper, which
totally.
I love that a lot.
Well, the thing about taking something too seriously, I feel like if you establish the tone well right off the bat and the whole game is that way, then it's not silly and goofy because people then, yeah. you're like, this is the world I live in. Like, guys can like put lightning in their like knuckles and shoot someone when they punch them. Like, that's normal yeah. and fine. So now I'm totally ready for whatever scenario I come into.
It's extremely difficult to do well, I think. And it's something that I really feel Kojima is sort of a master of, that, of being both simultaneously surreal and goofy and ridiculous and over the top, and also like, oh, we gotta pay attention to this. This is real. This is important, serious stuff, you know? I love it. I love it a lot.
So my next one is also a Venture Bros, but it's the last Venture Bros one I do. And I'm excited to do this because it's something that we quote at each other constantly. Why don't we take a little vacation over to Spider Skull Island?
Of course. That's the most like overt example of, oh, Johnny yes. Quest has to go to a secret island that's shaped like a evil skull and there's spiders.
And it's
like,
a spider.
It just combine all of the silly, like scary things that you face in a jungle adventure and make an island out of it.
So I looked up the wiki for Spider Skull Island and I got yes. some really fun facts about it. So Spider Skull Island, which was originally owned by Scaramantula. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Which is a guy who just had like a spider on his face.
Which is another homage to James Bond. It's, yes. it's Scaramanga from right. The Man with the Golden Gun.
Exactly.
Played by the late, great Christopher Lee.
Right.
Wonderful. Yes.
So yeah. that was who originally owned the island. But then Jonas Venture Jr. took it over, who is the, you know...
Jonas Venture Jr.
Exactly. It's just so fun to do his thing. But he's Rusty's like younger, well, I guess kind of a twin, but more successful.
He's, yeah.
Rusty ate him in the womb and then he like grew out of his spine and became another person.
Every time we have to explain something from something like the Venture Brothers, right. I'm just like, how far into this are we going to go?
Because exactly. But anyway, so Jonas Venture Jr., he took over Spider Skull Island, and it has some information here. So it's its own sovereign nation, and because of that, Jonas Jr., he outlawed cigarettes and alcohol, but he legalized marijuana and gay marriage. So these are some of the things you can look forward to on Spider Skull Island.
Of course. So, you know, you have to find a way. Another important feature of any secret lair is you have to have a bunch of kind of goons that run around and do your bidding for you, right? You've got to find a way to make it appealing for them. You know, they've got to have some kind of benefits. The TV Tropes page for evil lairs lists a bunch of kind of common traits, right? And one of the ones that I thought was so funny is non-compliance with OSHA standards.
Yes.
Which I just think is so great. But that's so accurate. You know, every evil lair has, you know, a bunch of weird, like, you know, like metal, like gangways that you have to walk across that don't have like railings.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's like a self-destruct button that's just protected by nothing.
Right.
You know, it's just a button anyone could press at any time.
Well,
things like that have to exist in your evil lair. So if you're going to be working with all of these occupational hazards, you need to have some good benefits.
Exactly. Right. Like gay marriage and marijuana.
Exactly.
That's allowed. No, but you're right with the dangerous like settings, if only because, well, at some point, you know, you're going to have a big sword fight on this like rickety walkway and
yes.
someone's going to fall to their death.
Yes.
Like, that's just things that happen
yeah.
here.
I love it. So my next one that I had here was actually a kind of a broad example, just any bridge as long as there's a troll under it.
That's just Troll's House.
I think, yeah, I think that's kind of a, that's sort of like a fundamental, like really kind of basic fantasy type thing. It's not a really elaborate base, sure, mm-hmm. but it's the place that this bridge troll operates all of his, you know, nefarious like highwayman sort of trolling deeds out of. Every time you try to walk by, you got to deal with his, you know, maybe he doesn't have an elaborate death trap that you have to run through like a maze of pressure plates and sharks
like,
with freaking laser beams
the
on their heads or whatever.
Turtles.
Yeah. It might just be a bridge that you walk across, but there's a troll on the end, and if you don't, you know, appease the troll, then you're not going to make it out alive.
I can't believe that a kid's animated movie does not yet exist about a troll who needs to go in search of like a new bridge or his first bridge.
I'm sure there's a children's book or something.
That just
right?
feels like
that
something that should
to be
exist.
A thing.
Yeah, where it's like, okay, like maybe, I don't know, you could make it even a commentary about like maybe yeah. the bridge is torn down because they're building a new development and now he has to go find a new bridge.
It's way too obvious of a subversion of that trope to not exist, right? Like, you know, we say all the time, like, there's no real new ideas, just old ideas used in new ways.
Yeah.
Right.
My next one would be so I kept thinking of pirate ships because I think a lot of cool bad guy pirates, their ship is kind of their lair and their base of operations.
Captain Hook, obviously.
Yeah. So he has the Jolly Roger, but the Jolly Roger is not the first and coolest pirate ship that I think of. My favorite evil pirate ship is definitely the Flying Dutchman, as in the Pirates of the Caribbean movies. If only because not only does the front of it look like a bunch of like the splintered wood is like the teeth of this great beast, and it can submerge underwater and like rise dramatically up from the waves. But the coolest thing about it is definitely the fact that Davy Jones installed an enormous pipe organ in the back of his ship, where he like ominously plays this horrifying music as his crew like works through the night,
absolutely
like, pulling the lines and doing whatever the hell they do on that boat.
You've got to have some kind of an evil theme music, right? Yeah. Whether you're the Phantom of the Opera sitting up in your tower playing music, or if you're like
in the basement,
if you're well wherever you are, Dracula sits up in the tower, the Phantom sits in the basement, right? There's a lot of examples of this in like Castlevania too, like, you know, there's always spooky organ music playing in the background while you're going through Dracula's castle or whatever.
I actually wrote down Dracula's castle. Cool. Location. Yeah,
I think that's a good one that works very similarly in terms of kind of like tone to Davy Jones's thing. I also think something that's really interesting about Davy Jones's Flying Dutchman is that all of his goons are literally a part of the environment.
Part of the crew, part of the ship.
Exactly. Part of the crew, part of the ship. Like, you can't really escape from it. There's something that it's a part of their identity, this location is. And it's something that is just like so fundamental and core to them. I think that's a great design choice for a villain, that if his goons even wanted to escape, they couldn't.
Yeah.
You know? They are bound to serve him and his ship.
Absolutely. And I love how you're kind of touching on this, but the idea that, because he always asks that, you know, you have to serve 100 years before the mast, and then you can go free. But it's kind of like a deal with the devil or the monkey's paw situation, where if you're there for 100 years, you literally grow into the ship and you can't escape anymore.
You turn into a weird crab man. Your head is just a crab and your body is a different thing. I don't know.
But there's like, we see two characters in the movies. One is this old man that first kind of talks to Will and he tells him about how to stab the heart. And that guy has literally just become a lantern. Like, he's so grown into the thing, he just holds a light. And then we see something similar with Will's father, Bootstrap Bill, later in the third one, when Elizabeth is in the brig of the Flying Dutchman. And he's also starting to like, the ship is growing around him and he's losing his memory. It's great. Absolutely. It's very cool. It's spooky.
I love it. I love it a lot.
Oh, thanks.
I think Davy Jones highlights kind of an interesting point too, that, you know, evil is sort of relative. Davy Jones wasn't really an evil character. He should be ideally sort of a neutral character that ferries the dead between, you know, the living and the afterlife or whatever, right? But because of various events that transpire in his life, he becomes a more malicious and less understanding sort of character.
I know I've talked about it before. I so agree. But like, oh my God, that tragic love story with him and Calypso, the reason he becomes the monster that he is, I cry every time.
No, it's so great.
And I love it.
And I think, so I kind of wanted to include this example as sort of a joke, but I think it is actually kind of a good and interesting, you know, discussion point, is the relativity of evil, right? So, kind of jumping off of that, the next example that I wanted to include was Shrek's swamp from the perspective of Farquaad and all of the like non-magical humans, right?
Definitely.
Like, everyone in Duloc views Shrek and all of these fairy tale creatures as like kind of evil and scary and spooky, and this swamp is this evil spooky place that, you know, we want to just dump everybody in, or we don't want to go to because it's this nasty sort of like, oh, you'll die if you go there, you'll get eaten by an ogre or you'll get sucked into the quicksand or whatever, right?
Absolutely.
That's incorrect from Shrek's perspective, but from Lord Farquaad's perspective, or from maybe just any average person in the kingdom, that rings true. That is like an evil, scary place. And so, you know, how interesting would it be to say, let's play a campaign where our party, our like good heroic party, we buy a tavern and we outfit it, you know, we build it up into this great like fortress, we fortify the walls and we make it our kind of base of operations where we can plan out all of our attacks against the evil whoever. Mm-hmm. And then in the next campaign you play as the bad guys trying to assail this tavern that you built. You know, you just sort of switch the perspective on it, because we've experienced this place as a bastion of hope and a symbol of light and goodness. And now we're just saying, well, somebody else has a different perspective, you know?
So what would be an interesting challenge for that kind of role play swap is that if you first spend all of your time building this inn, you know all the ins and outs of it, its weak points and its strong points, you would have to challenge yourself as a role player if you then play as the villains who are trying to like you know, lay siege upon this location, to not think, oh, well, I know that there's like a entrance through the cellar. You have to be like, oh, we don't know this. We have to investigate and play through new eyes.
Absolutely. You know, I think there's definitely an aspect of kind of metagaming that you need to avoid there. But I also think that as a DM from that perspective, it would be a fun opportunity to say, hey, you guys built all this stuff. Now I'm going to say 20 years have passed. You know, your party, you did all these great deeds and you kind of retired, or maybe you went and did other adventures, but they weren't really worth continuing to explore. Now in this evil perspective campaign, I'm just going to decide what happened in this 20 years. So you have no idea what other changes have been made to this place. You know, you might say, well, you know, they built a safe house in the basement that you can access by going behind the, you know, the goat herding path and, you know, outside of town or whatever. And you can go through the secret tunnel to get there. But maybe in the 20 years since the good guys first built it, they've put a bunch of traps and stuff there because they were attacked so many times or somebody found it out.
Yeah.
I think that would be very, very fun as a DM to take something my players created and add 20 years of history onto it.
Totally. That would be really interesting.
So, so cool. And also a great way to have your players be like, oh, shit. You know, like to really just like stop your characters in their tracks and say, we don't know what's going on here. We thought we went in really confident. I think that would be my favorite thing, is to like let you guys go in with all of the confidence in the world, say, okay, we're kind of familiar. We're going to maybe pretend like we're going to try to metagame and like try not to metagame and try to like not use this knowledge, but you kind of do have it. And then the first time you sort of toe the line, you just get dunked on so hard. And I think that would be a really fun tone setting experience for the party.
Totally. I like it a lot.
I like it a lot too.
My next one, and I haven't actually played this game, but I love all the art and everything that I've seen for it. Next one I have is The Devil's Casino from Cuphead.
Oh, of course.
As run by King Dice.
Yes. When we watched that really cool video of the design of the King Dice fight, which is a phenomenal game for anyone who hasn't played Cuphead. Just in general, an incredible work of art. Like, go, if you don't want to play it, if you're not interested in a really difficult game, just go watch either some footage of the behind the scenes, like making of, or watch a playthrough of it or whatever. Yeah. It's so good.
All hand-drawn animation, kind of styled in the classic sort of Betty Boop, early like Mickey Mouse, those kind of like spooky cartoons.
Yeah, that kind of Steamboat Willie style.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But no, so I was thinking earlier, because I was like, I like the idea of a lair, which is kind of a place that maybe when you first enter it, you don't think necessarily, oh, this is a, like, you don't expect what's going to happen. You don't go there looking for the villain. But as soon as you're there, the doors lock behind you, and suddenly it's kind of this game that the villain is playing with you to be like, if you can go through my maze, essentially, or all the levels or all the rooms, that and you can defeat me, then you can escape. Yeah. But you have to do that first. And I was like, what's a good setting for that? And I was like, a casino would be cool. But then I was like, this is an original idea. They did it in Cuphead. So I wrote it down. So I was like, I love that idea that you'd have to, you know, play your way through the Devil's Casino.
Totally. Well, and we always go back to that, like, deal with the devil kind of thing.
Yes.
Like, a malevolent force that loves a bargain. They're all powerful, but their weakness is if you can get them to make a bargain with you and you win, they have to uphold that. That's the one thing,
right?
The one rule they won't break is if they make a deal with you, they will uphold their end of the deal under any circumstances. I think that's so cool.
I
think a casino is a really great place for that, because it's easy to create a scenario where you're like, well, there's rules for how all this stuff works, and there's a winner and there's a loser in every situation. So that's just a really interesting sort of setting for that.
I think there's also something about casinos, though, like the fact that there are no windows and all of the lights and the mirrors that are in there. It's meant to like disorient you and distract you, and so you lose track of time.
They're giving you free drinks. There's smoke in the air.
I think there's a lot of really cool stuff that's like actual things that are considered in the designing of these places in real life that you can pull into making your own kind of scary place or dangerous location.
Absolutely.
Your lair that you're going to be kind of fighting your way through.
I'm so glad you mentioned casino. I'm very tempted now to just, no matter what my prompt is, to make a casino lair.
I was thinking that too, honestly.
Really cool.
But if you want to, we can maybe like rock, paper, scissors for it.
Fist fight over it off air.
Yeah.
So one thing that I think we would be remiss if we didn't talk about this, sort of the gold standard for D&D secret lairs. We've got to talk about Strahd. Strahd von Zarovich's spooky castle. He's got all kinds of cool NPCs there. There's traps. There's monsters. It's like there's a whole kind of city around it in Barovia. It's a really, really interesting exploration of this. And Strahd is also just such a cool bad guy. Like, everybody loves a cool vampire.
Yeah.
He's Dracula, but he's kind of a modernized, cool, sexy Dracula.
Yeah.
without having to wear a bunch of weird leather and go to raves and that kind of thing.
Oh, man.
He's a really interesting character. I love it.
But what if he wants to wear leather and go to weird raves?
If Strahd wants to, he can do whatever he wants, to be totally honest. But
because his lair, that's essentially just Dracula's castle in D&D.
It's just a huge, massive castle, but there's like a whole adventure that you can go through in Strahd's castle. And like, there's so much stuff that can happen there and so many different ways to make your way through that castle that I think it's a very, very well designed evil lair.
Ooh,
it's
a whole
10 level campaign basically can be designed around just that one lair.
That's so cool.
Again, that's absolutely the gold standard, I think, in published D&D material, in my opinion.
Nice.
Yeah.
My last like serious one, then I got a couple that we can just like flip through if we want. I haven't talked about rock and roll in a while, but since it has one of my all-time favorite villains, Mock Swagger,
yes.
Mock has a very cool lair, and it's this mansion that he lives in, up in like the mountains in the forest, and he invites the band up there so he can, you know, take Angel away because he needs her voice. And when he's kicking out the other band members and he's leaving, the roof of the mansion opens up and this large dirigible like inflates on top of it. And then the mansion like separates into two pieces and it rises into the air and it becomes like this evil blimp
Certainly.
That he flies away on. It's very spooky and cool.
Every evil lair has to have like an emergency escape plan.
Right.
You know?
Because when you press your self-destruct button, you have to be able to flee.
Certainly. Certainly. It has to turn into a skyship or a submarine or a, you know, a spaceship or whatever.
Yeah.
That's great. I love that a lot.
Yeah. Mock's mansion that can fly is very cool.
So kind of on that note, another good one that you sort of mentioned this in passing when we were just sort of brainstorming about this, Bowser's Castle.
Yes.
Is always turning into, you know, all Mario characters are like, one minute they're playing go-karts, the next minute they're golfing, the next minute they're playing tennis, the next minute they're jumping through pipes and kidnapping princesses, right? Like, they're always ready to transition into some other activity, right?
Yeah.
Bowser's Castle is, one second it's just a big castle, the next second it's like a giant robot anime mech machine or whatever, you know? It's shooting bullet bills out, it's turning into a dragon, it's like got lava everywhere.
So much lava.
So much lava, more lava than you've ever seen.
So many spikes.
At Bowser's Castle. I think Bowser's Castle is, there's not really a lot more to say about it. Just play any Mario game and think about, how do I include a fire bar? How do I include a whatever in my D&D game?
I'm just picturing like Bowser in his little bathrobe and he's got his little reading glasses on and maybe there's a little Goomba there with a clipboard and he's like, he's like, all right, like, I just need to confirm our shipment for spikes this week. And he's like, yeah, we need to double the lava pits. They got here too quickly last time and I just really want to try and up the ante.
Exactly.
How much is this going to cost me, man?
How many?
Like, don't screw me over on this game.
How many Goomba engineers does Bowser employ to constantly be redesigning and rebuilding his castle after Mario goes through and then it crumbles to the ground in every game?
And he's like, do me a favor. Just avoid the plumbing. No plumbing.
Yeah, please, no pipes. The pipes are what always screw us. Like, that's what always happens.
It's like, I don't need water. I'm like a fire dragon turtle. Like, it's cool. No water in my house, please.
Here's the thing. Like, Bowser's main enemy is a plumber. You don't want to include a bunch of pipes, right? Like, if my main enemy was like an astronaut, I wouldn't say that the only way to get to the heart of my base is to do a spacewalker from the rocket ship or whatever. Yeah, exactly. Like, it just seems like bad design. So I don't know if the Goombas or the Koopas or if Bowser himself is in charge of that, but like, somebody needs to reassess, I think, their process there.
For reals. That just seems like, you know, a no-brainer.
Absolutely. So the one that I actually really want to talk about,
okay,
that I think is a really good example of this is probably my favorite choice of all of these is Dr. Wily's castle from literally any Mega Man game. First off, visually, it's a super cool looking evil lair. It's got like it's shaped like a big skull and it's got like rocket ships and satellites and stuff. Like, it's just a bunch of like dumb, silly technology sort of coming off of it.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that you traverse through Wily's castle historically in Mega Man games is you have to fight all 8 of the robot masters in your game first. So you have your Cut Man and your Elec Man and your Bomb Man and your Guts Man and, you know, Quick Man, all the different enemies that you fight. Every enemy has their own level. Then after you beat all 8 of them, you go to Wily's castle, you make your way through, you fight a few other bosses, and then twist, all of the enemies that you've already beaten have retreated to Wily's castle. Waiting for you, great. More powerful than before, and you have a boss rush. You have to fight them all back to back to get to Wily, which I think is such a cool thing. Like, I would love to include something like that in a D&D game where you say, okay, so, you know, right now we're doing our session where we have Baphomet and his six sons that you guys are going to be kind of fighting your way through this whole family. What if after you fought them all, you get to Baphomet's lair and they've all been sort of reincarnated in a different form?
Maybe
and you
all have to, like zombie versions.
Exactly,
of
like zombie versions of all these enemies
that
you fought before.
And I love that.
Totally. And like every one of them was a formidable foe on their own. Now you have to fight them all again, all at the same time. And you guys are, of course, stronger, but are you stronger enough? I think that would be a really, really cool kind of culmination. And that's why I love, like, mechanically, every Mega Man game is just so pure and I love that design. I think that's really cool.
That's awesome.
You fight them one at a time, and then you go boom, 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 do them all back to back.
And I've never played Mega Man. Is it a, like, a side-scrolling kind of classic?
So there are side-scrolling and 3D Mega Man games. Okay. Traditionally, they're side-scrolling 8-bit NES games. And then the Mega Man X on the Super Nintendo is, in my opinion, probably the best one.
Neat.
But yeah, they're all like kind of side-scrolling, like action platformer games, which, cool. Ooh, one of my favorite genres of games. So early rec room for you there. Go play a Mega Man game.
Yay. I would say one of my last ones that I just want to mention is Yzma's quote-unquote evil lair.
Course. She's got all kinds of levers. You never know if you're pulling the right lever.
Exactly. You gotta pull the lever. I love that you have to go on a fun little roller coaster ride to get down there. It's just great. All of her cool science equipment. And then there's all those big walkways. Like we said, you have to have the big walkways
big dangerous walkways.
Leads to all of these weird canals and everything. So great.
Certainly. I love that. There's a lot of, basically any Disney villain is going to have a good one for the most part.
I also wrote down Scar's lair, that kind of volcanic rock formation.
Totally.
Where he hangs out with all the hyenas.
And then Dark Pride Rock. Ooh, cool. Yeah.
The elephant graveyard.
That's something that I think is also really cool. The idea that a villain can corrupt any place they walk into.
Yeah.
You know, they can have their own original lair that they built, tailor-made to their, a bespoke lair that they made for their purposes, right? But also, maybe they're on the run. They have to leave their kind of home base, and they end up somewhere else, and the place that they end up becomes sort of darkened and worse because of their presence there.
Well, in kind of the silly light of sort of the Venture Bro things we were talking about, I feel like for villains, your brand is so important.
Oh, absolutely.
It's what helps you stand out from just common criminals, and it makes you recognizable. Like, I was just thinking, when Yzma fools everyone that Cusco is dead, she instantly, has them do that big remodel of the palace, and so suddenly everything is Yzma designed. And then when she's on the road with Kronk, she has her little purple branded
tent. Palanquin or whatever.
Yeah, that she rides around on. Like, it's just, brand is everything.
No, I totally agree. The visual, the aesthetics of your villain brand are very important. I love that. So a couple other just quick ones I'll just buzz through. The island of Dr. Zaroff from The Most Dangerous Game, a whole island that's an evil lair full of traps that you just have to survive for 24 hours. Mm-hmm. I think that's a great one.
Yeah.
Similarly to that, Darkseid's planet of Apocalypse. It's an entire planet that's just a big burning fucked up trash pile of an evil base. The whole thing is just nasty, spewing fumes of industry out of the hole. It's like a robot planet. It's just, it's not a great place to go. Anytime you go there, it's a bad time. Go, if you are a fan of DC stuff at all, definitely go and watch the most recent DC animated film, Justice League Dark Apocalypse War. It's so good. It's very much like we've talked a lot before on the show about Flashpoint Paradox and how it kind of brings in all of these heroes in a really interesting, all of the DC heroes in an interesting way. And it kind of subverts them because you're in an alternate timeline. Apocalypse War does something very similar. It basically brings in every DC hero and villain. They all have to kind of team up against Darkseid, and they go to Apocalypse and have this huge epic fight. And it's really, really cool. It's just stupid, silly, mindless fun. But it's very good at being stupid, silly, mindless fun.
Yeah. I kind of similar to that. I had written down the underworld, and I was thinking mostly of with Hades from Hercules, the Disney version, but also kind of the idea of Hades Town as well from the musical kind of fits that too.
Yeah, absolutely. The underworld in general is great. Hades is one of our favorite villains. The devil is always fun.
We love
the devil on this podcast.
Yeah, the devil. He's the best.
We totally stand Satan on this. Yeah,
we just lost all of our Christian listeners.
Yay! That's I think a pretty good spectrum of examples though, that we have here. So let's go ahead. Let's transition into our prompting mode. And I think I got the first prompt last episode. So Piper, why don't you deliver unto yourself, render unto Caesar what is Caesar's, a prompt to create.
I got the word record.
Record. Ooh, okay.
That makes me think of music.
Yeah.
And I am kind of in the Cuphead mindset right now, so now I'm thinking of like a jukebox or
like a speakeasy,
like a juice joint, some kind of cool musical venue. I think a speakeasy would be pretty cool.
A jazz club is such a cool place to have, as you know, imagine being like a cool mob boss and everybody has to come in, and they're, you know, you come to like make a cool deal with this guy. You go in, you see a show, you're like, oh, this place isn't so bad. It's kind of nice. And then they part a curtain and somebody just punches you in the gut. And you're like, all right, now we're going to do our deals. We're going to work.
Oh my gosh. I think, this layer, it's definitely going to be, let's call it a speakeasy. Okay. I think this is kind of, I'm trying to picture the person who would run this place. I want him to be a musician. And so when he got powerful, like doing all these crimes, and they knew they had to have sort of like a base of operations, he wanted it to be not only a place where he could do business, and if anyone walked in there, they would be terrified of him and respect him, but also a place where people want to go there. It's like the most happening club in the city.
I love it. Well, he has to have a cover, you know, like it's not just a random evil lair that nobody can go to. It is a legitimate business outside of that, right?
Yeah, I think he plays in the band that's on the stage.
Cool.
I think if there was a scene, you know, where there's some like young mobsters like trying to, you know, get their start in the criminal world, and they get to this this venue and they're like, we're here to see like the big boss or whatever, and they're like, all right honey, like take a seat, and like he sits down, they start watching the show, and then afterwards, like maybe he either has to be like the piano player, because that's a really cool role, or maybe he plays like saxophone or trombone. I'm thinking of like Riker from Star Trek. He plays the bone. So he's ready to bone down.
I love the piano thing, because I think it implies someone that's like good with their hands, which is kind of scary. Yeah, they're obviously very sophisticated. They've had a lot of training. I mean, all instruments require training, right? But like somebody who can, you know, tickle those ivories, mm-hmm. right? I'm going to expect that they would say, I'm good with my hands. And you'd think, oh, like you're like a craftsman. And they'd be like, no, I'm good at torturing people with my hands. Mm-hmm. You know, like that would be a really cool kind of scary turn, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't help but think of, it's been a while since we've talked about Boardwalk Empire on the show too. Like Nucky Thompson or Chalky White late in the show, that they have that kind of speakeasy that they work out of for a while.
It's Chalky's Club.
Yeah, Chalky's Club.
Yeah, that is a lot of what I'm picturing here. I think, yeah, so let's say he's the piano player. I want this place to be, it's got to be down by the water. Yeah. So that there's always
down on the bayou.
Yeah, no, it's got to be down by the water, so there's like trap doors that he could like open up, and they could jump down into little boats that are waiting and kind of get away if they need to. That way they can also like accept their shipments of like guns and drink and all kinds of that good stuff. But I also, because I'm still loving the idea of like if you go someplace, they could like lock you in and you couldn't get out.
Yeah.
And now you have to like fight your way through this like jazz club, and there's like different levels where there's like a brothel, and there's like the rooms in the back where, you know, they make all the gin and everything.
For sure.
Like you have to go through what feels like, I want this to be kind of supernatural. Like maybe
it's looks, like the layers of hell sort of.
Well, yeah, maybe it looks small on the outside, but once you get in there, it goes so deep. Like I'm picturing in Spirited Away when our main character is like running through those back kitchens and you see these like giant barrels full of like fish and weird monsters and stuff.
Yeah.
I feel like there would be rooms like that where you feel like you just keep running, but the distillery keeps going.
I love it.
So that's kind of where I am right now.
Something that I also am, now we don't have to attach this, but I think this would be a really cool setting to play in, is imagine like, so sort of like in the same vein as like a Vampire the Masquerade sort of setting, where it's kind of a modern world where there's vampires that are kind of like every night all the vampires come out and they do their vampire stuff, right? What if it's like Vampire New Orleans, and there's like a cool like speakeasy down on the water, and it's run, maybe it's run by vampires, maybe it's frequented by vampires or something like that, and our party may not even be you know, acting against the owner of this, but they just go there at the wrong time. And now they're sort of like, ooh, we're in kind of like weird mixed company here, you know, like this is a weird place to be right now. That's such a weird, scary vibe. And I love the sort of like dark nature of that.
I like
cool.
that too. I think I want to like widen it a little bit.
Yeah.
So it's not just vampires, but it's like a venue frequented by like creatures of the night.
Yes. I love that. Vampires, werewolves, well, the fae, whatever.
Everyone, they walk in and they look like humans, but once they're there, they can kind of like show their true selves. So you see like goblins and werepeople and vampires and all kinds of freaky stuff like that.
This is such a cool parallel to Prohibition that like maybe it's like an alternate history, you know, a fantasy prohibition or whatever, where instead of outlawing alcohol, they outlaw, you know, like supernatural creatures. Only
magic.
Only, yeah, they outlaw magic or whatever. Yeah. You're not allowed to be here if you're a vampire or whatever. You're not allowed to go into like normal everyday establishments if you are a werewolf or a vampire or a puka or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so there's these speakeasies that open up that are accessible to the creatures of the night.
Absolutely.
What a cool concept.
I like
that
a lot.
Is
that would yeah. also mean that like one of the rooms that you're like running through at some point, you just see like people hooked up to machines that's like taking their blood out so they
totally.
Can like pour that from the tap and stuff like that.
And there's like blackout curtains everywhere. That would maybe be one of the ways you could kind of tell from the street, like if a place is friendly to these types of creatures, is if you look at the windows and it's just, you know, black cloth over the windows all the time.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah. I feel like this guy's name should be Midnight Jack.
Midnight Jack. I like that.
Midnight Jack's Ooh. Juice joint.
What about...
I need a cooler like name for his place.
What about his brother, 11 O'Clock Jack? He's slightly younger than him, a little less scary.
I think he killed that guy. He's like, you're cramping my style.
Yeah, okay. There can only be one Jack. Fair enough. Okay.
Midnight Jack.
I like that. All right. That's a really cool start here. I don't know how I'm going to follow this one up, Piper. Maybe I'll get a really cool prompt.
Well, maybe you'll we'll do see. A casino.
Maybe I will do a casino.
To rival my gin joint.
Spoilers. I'm probably going to do a casino. I actually do kind of like the idea of making a casino in the same town that is kind of competing. You know, they're like, you're kind of cutting in on my piece of the action. You know, you can't play cards in outside of a casino. You can't have that in a speakeasy.
I like it. Sam, your word is America's pastime, baseball.
Baseball. Ooh, okay. So, okay, all right. I don't want to just like be lazy and try to tie this into the idea that we already had here, mm-hmm. but I do think it would be interesting to say, you know, baseball is a legitimate sport. It's a normal pastime. It's something that everybody during the day in the legal hours of the day kind of interacts with this institution, mm-hmm. right? But, you know, we would have off the record or like unofficial sort of betting parlors for these
yes,
things, you know?
Definitely.
So, you know, maybe not a casino, but maybe sort of like a place where all, you know, you go where all the bookies kind of work, where you say, okay, I want to put, you know, $5 million on Joe DiMaggio. Mm-hmm. And, if Joe DiMaggio, bites Marilyn Monroe's neck because everybody knows Joe DiMaggio is secretly a vampire, then I'm going to win all my money back or whatever. I think that'd be kind of a cool thing. Like it's a casino and a place for all the like kind of bookies to go where you place all of the sort of off color bets on sporting events, on legitimate pastimes. Mm-hmm. And it would maybe be something that I kind of want to, I think it'd be really cool to have both these places in the same town.
No, I agree.
Right? I like the idea that this is a place that is explicitly, exclusively for humans. Yeah,
yeah.
For non-supernatural creatures. So that could be something that could kind of set us up for a lot of tension there.
Yeah.
That there's one institution that's just for the creatures of the night, and there's one institution that is trying to create a space in the night for creatures of the day.
Yeah. So one thing I'm picturing, because this is definitely with the kind of setting that we've created, I think you should also have sort of like a mob operation that's run out of there.
Of course.
All the baseball players back then, they looked like huge, like beefy dudes who worked
yes,
down by the
yes.
docks. And so I think you should have like a mob organization there that when your players aren't, you know, playing baseball during the day, they're taking these big old bats and they're going out at night.
For sure.
And they are distributing their justice.
I like that a lot. All the bouncers are like big circus strongmen, just shirtless but with overalls and swinging four bats at once. I think
you
that'd
have,
be really cool.
The Babe is
yes,
yeah, so
yes, exactly.
You know, all these barrel-chested dudes who can they just drink and smoke constantly.
I like it a lot. I also really like the idea of, you know, you sort of talk about, you know, there's this mob organization that operates out of here. I think it's really interesting to imagine a city where there is the human mob, the vampire mob, the werewolf mob, the fairy mob, like all of these different organizations kind of want a piece of this place. Yeah. How cool would that be? You know, we've talked about before how I think it's really easy to... It's not that it's easy, but it's more common to build a D&D setting around like traveling around the wider world mm-hmm. and saying, okay, today we're in this city, tomorrow we're in that city. We're going to see everything in between. We're going to, you know, jump around, go through the mountains, go through the woods, whatever. I always really like campaigns where you spend a lot of time in one city and you find interesting things to do in that one city. And that can be sometimes a difficult thing to sort of balance or to make interesting. I think it would be very, very cool to build a city that has all of these different factions operating inside of it, you know? And they have different headquarters, you know? The human
It'll be
mob,
kind of like a Gangs of New York.
Exactly. The human mob operates out of this casino. Mm-hmm. And the werewolf mob operates maybe out of your, like, speakeasy. And the vampire mob operates out of, like, the docks or something. And the fairy mob operates out of, like, the courthouse. Or, you know, there's all kinds of different, like, places where everybody has a little hub where they all sort of work.
And the centaurs work out of the
they work out of the horse tracks,
yeah, exactly,
obviously.
Yeah,
exactly,
the horse tracks.
I love that. I imagine the way they would fix the races is they would just get a centaur and just put a little like cloth horse head over his human body.
Oh my gosh.
He'd be like, I'm a horse just like you. And then he's like shooting arrows at the other horses while he's racing. He's like
just
throwing
like
little knives.
Yeah. The horses as he goes down the track.
So, and like everyone knows, but they're like, well, that's the centaur mob. There's
exactly.
nothing we can really do about it.
Oh my God.
You don't want to cross the centaur mob.
What'd be interesting about that is it would change the sport because it'd be less about like betting on animals. And now it's suddenly kind of like a track and field sort of a thing. Like we're just betting on athletes.
Totally.
Let's see which
totally.
Athlete can run the fastest. I like that a lot. I also feel like there's a lot of great historical context for there to be like a criminal organization operating out of sort of like your baseball stadium bettor's parlor, because there have been many famous instances of games being fixed.
The World Series was fixed.
Yeah
by,
exactly.
By Arnold Rothstein. Yeah.
Yeah. So lots of good stuff to work with.
I like that a lot.
Yeah.
I think we should maybe decide on one thing that all criminal activity in this city revolves around. There's like one thing that everyone's kind of fighting for control of. Like maybe we say it's baseball. Maybe that was
baseball.
The prompt that like baseball is where all
no
the money
fighting over baseball.
Well, okay. But like,
I think they're fighting over magic. Cause that's what you said.
Fighting
was
over
outlawed.
Magic. That's,
yeah.
That's fair. Yeah. Maybe that is. Yeah. It's the magic prohibition, magical prohibition.
Right. Because I bet the baseball players, like they, maybe if they can get their hands on some of this magic, it's kind of like enhancement drugs.
Totally.
Performance.
Totally.
Enhancement.
Steroids. Yeah.
And so yeah, they can like play better. And
I like it.
Yeah. Win more games.
So it like in the same way, kind of in American history, there was like the white baseball league and the black baseball league and like women's baseball leagues or whatever. There's like the human baseball league. And they're like, okay, all of the magical races have to have their own league. They can't play in our league or whatever.
No.
I don't know. Like the bringing magic into the like big baseball league might be kind of an interesting sort of social issue that's going on right now too.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of cool stuff that could happen in this.
I like
this
that
a lot.
Both of our main places are centered around entertainment.
Yeah.
Yours is sports and mine is music.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, mine's just like an evil sports bar and casino.
I like it.
Mine's
though.
Like Champs, but with murders.
No, it's great. Sam, I want you to describe what your stadium looks like.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Is it an open stadium or a closed stadium?
I want it to be an open sky stadium.
Nice.
I think it's something that... I think intentionally it's an open sky stadium that maybe... Maybe above it, there's like a giant, like a magnifying type mirror that when the moon comes out, it makes the moon appear huge. And it's sort of like it's sort of like an affront to all of the creatures of the night that they're like, hey, anybody who comes in here who isn't a human, we can tell right away because the power of the moon is magnified in this space.
Dang.
Like we want to see that moon big in the sky because it doesn't affect us humans, you know? So if a vampire comes in or a werewolf comes in or whatever, you know right away. And the big suspended strongman bouncers can kick him out.
Interesting. I like that. That would be quite a feat of engineering to get a giant piece of glass that large.
Totally. Totally.
Yeah. Very cool. Awesome. Do you want to throw in some modifiers?
Let's throw in some modifiers here. So you got the first prompt. So I'll give you the first modifier here as well. Okay. So the modifier that you got here, Piper, is my kryptonite. So
weakness.
Yeah, either your
of this location
speakeasy, or maybe the owner of the speakeasy or something has some kind of a weakness.
I would say we have to talk about the lair itself, since that's our topic this week.
For sure.
I think the weakness of this lair is that it is, I think, built on the docks. And so I think if somebody really wanted to like go and cause problem here, they could, I don't know, saw the legs of like the dock and make it like fall into the water.
For sure. Or maybe if someone with, you know, like druidic, like weather changing magic could like raise the water level or something, they could flood us out or something like that. Cause a landslide.
Exactly. I also see if someone got really crazy, they could just get their hands on like a really big boat and crash it into the docks.
It'd be like Speed 2. Crash a giant boat into our speakeasy.
Yeah, exactly. I think its location is already rather precarious.
I like it.
But I think because there is this kind of magical charm that's put over the place that makes it much larger on the inside than it is on the outside, Midnight Jack, who had it built, he made a deal with like some water nymphs or some merfolk, and they're like, oh yeah, we'll keep the waters calm around the docks here so that it doesn't, you know, your place stays safe, stable and everything.
I like that. Another mafia group that has to, the mer mafia.
Oh my God.
The mer mafia.
That's what you do. Like, they make people sleep with the fishes. They're like, oh my God. Yeah, I'm just going to give you to the merfolk, and then you're going to never breathe again.
Piper, who is more dangerous? Who is like, would you rather cross the Centaur Mafia or the Mer Mafia?
Oh, God. I think I'd rather cross the Mer Mafia because I'm so afraid of what the centaurs could possibly do.
They can't really come on land, I guess.
Yeah. I'm just really spooked by centaurs. I don't like a human man or woman sprouting out of a horse body.
That's a really good point, yeah.
They freak me out. So I'd rather deal with whatever mer people would do to me.
Centaurs can mess you up on land, and they probably wouldn't do too bad in the sea.
I've always heard that horses are good swimmers.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas like a mer person, they're pretty much like delegated to staying in the water. Mm-hmm. You know, you can just climb a mountain and you can't be hurt by mermaids, basically.
I'm now just picturing, I feel like there's another part of this town. It's not far from Midnight Jack's, but there would be sort of a market on the pier where merfolk have set up different stands and they just swim up to the edge and they can sell their fish and their wares.
Oh, cool. I like that.
So people go and buy things from the people of the sea.
I like it.
Yeah.
Is the way you summon them is like you buy like fish food and you throw it in the water and they're like, oh.
I think they would stab you with a harpoon if you made that joke.
Yeah, they'd be very upset about that.
Yeah, they're like, you get out of here, you racist.
Of course, probably. I like that a lot. I think more interesting than either of these layers is that we've kind of started to develop this sort of city that has all of these different factions existing within it. That's very, very cool.
Yeah. It's making me think of a lot. There is a show that came out not long ago, and it had Orlando Bloom and Onion in it. Carnival Row.
Yes.
Carnival Row is very much like what we're describing.
Totally.
Less the mob scene, but it's definitely got all of these, you know, what if fairy creatures lived in the industrial age?
Yeah.
And what prejudices would they encounter?
It was Cara Delevingne, I think, was the woman, the lead opposite Orlando Bloom and Onion.
I liked it. I liked it a lot.
Yeah.
Especially since there was a very cute romance between this at first very stuck up white human woman and this very handsome black puck man.
Yeah.
And ooh, their love is good.
Yeah. Yeah. Piper's favorite kind of thing.
I love it. I love love for everybody.
Yes, totally. Okay. So the modifier that I got for myself here is I'll never tell.
What's your big secret?
I have to have a big secret. I actually think a really fun secret would be the person who runs this casino. Maybe they started the casino as kind of like a union leader. I think it should be a woman. I think her name should be Allison Foreman. So she was like the leader of some kind of like a union group or something. And she gained all this respect amongst all the blue collar workers in the city. And she gained all this money from like union dues and stuff. And she built a casino for all of these like humans to come together. And, you know, after work, they could kind of, she's obviously taking advantage of all of her workers. She's saying, after you get off work, your wages come right back to me because you're betting it all away. Right. But I think things maybe go well for a few years. And then one day, someone comes into the casino. If it's a vampire or a werewolf or something like that, they slip through security and they get her. Mm-hmm. And she turns into a creature of the night and she has to keep that a secret. So she's continuing to operate this humans only establishment and she can't let anyone know that she is no longer just a human.
Love it.
And so that's this like, you know, she has like prejudice against her own kind, basically, that she doesn't identify as part of this kind, right? Mm-hmm. But it's something that she kind of has to reconcile with. I think that would be a really interesting sort of I don't think she's a tragic hero. I think she's more of like a relatable villain.
Yeah, definitely.
But I this would be a very, very fun character to play. Someone who is, you know, hates with every fiber of her being these, you know, these abominations against like humankind. They're monsters. They hunt us down in the night and kill us. And then you become one of them and you have to sort of see like, okay, they're just like us. What is it like to see through their eyes?
One thing I'm wondering is, so because I assume that, do we assume that she and a lot of humans are kind of anti-magic as well?
I think maybe.
Apart from like, you know, the players who want to use it to enhance their performance and things like that.
I feel like in the same way that like Nucky Thompson kind of pretends to be pro-prohibition, mm-hmm. but he doesn't actually care. Like he's sort of like, yeah, women can vote. Fine. Yeah. Prohibition. Like whatever. I don't think she has strong stances either way. I think she's like, whatever makes me more money.
Gotcha.
You know?
Okay.
So for her, if she, you know, maybe something that she does do is she kind of she'll sell like magic potions sort of on the side because she can make a lot of money off of it.
Well, what I was going to suggest is that because if she has this thing and now suddenly, because the whole deal, I'm guessing your stadium, because they have the magnifying glass for the moon itself, they probably have a lot of night games, right?
Yeah.
Because that's the whole thing is that they're like, haha, we're playing this sport at night. The perfect time for you guys to come and watch or participate. Psych, you can't come.
Totally.
Because we're big jerks.
Totally.
And so because I feel like being at the stadium at night would be a big deal. And now if she goes there, she will be revealed. I can see her having to go and seek out like a potion that can kind of give her a human like allure
or a glamour
that can give her a human glamour to resemble how she used to appear, so that way she can appear at night.
Absolutely.
And people don't know her secret.
And maybe that's kind of her weakness, is that she has one like potion maker that makes all these potions for her. And if you could find if you start to suspect something's going on and you found that potion maker, they're sort of the weak link. You could bribe them or coerce them into divulging this secret, sort of.
Yeah.
I also really like the idea that maybe Allison is someone who she attended every game because it was like, you know, she would show up, she'd kind of press the flesh, she'd make an impression on everybody.
And now
suddenly she can't be there every night. Or if she is, she has to be, you know, kind of locked up in her suite wearing a mask or, you know, under an umbrella, or kind of always sort of like off in the distance, like weirdly, not really connecting with people in the same way as she used to.
Yeah, I think that would make people suspicious, so she'd have to get these potions so that she can make an appearance.
Totally.
And I like the idea that, because we keep talking about speakeasies and everything, when we say potion, quote unquote, I think it should be like moonshine.
Yeah.
Like,
so oh, of course.
When you drink, that's typically people drinking some kind of potion to do some magic of some sort. And so people maybe start assuming, wow, Allison has really developed this like drinking problem. She's like drinking constantly. But it's actually this potion that she's taking so that she doesn't reveal her new monster form.
Something else that I think would be really a cool thing to explore, kind of a connected to that, is, you know, if you turn into a werewolf, typically you sort of forget all the things you do as a werewolf, right?
Sometimes.
So maybe if you take this potion, it prevents you from being a werewolf, but you still lose all of the memories that you don't remember the things you do. You're still a human, right? But you don't necessarily know what happened that night.
Interesting.
Because so you took this moonshine. It's like you black out. Yeah. Or like you black out, like you drank too much and you just like lost your memories. I think that would be kind of an interesting thing. Like maybe not from a player's perspective, but if Allison Foreman was an NPC, that would be a fun thing to kind of get to see as a secondary character. That, you know, you're talking to her and you're like, what did you do last night? And she's like, oh, I don't know. And maybe she doesn't know because she took the potion, and maybe she doesn't know because she was a werewolf. You know, there's multiple options there.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of cool stuff that we can explore with this. But I kind of like what we've created so far. Unless you have a few last thoughts about other fantasy things that might exist in this
I love this
1920s world.
I think my favorite things about this, I love all of the different mafias that have established. The Mer Mafia, the Were Mafia, the Vampire Mafia, the Human Mafia, the Fae Mafia, etc. Like all of these competing organizations in the city.
Yeah, I feel like the Vampire Mafia would be rather separated from the rest of the mafia because they're all peddling and fighting over, you know, different magic and potions and liquor or whatever. The Vampire Mafia, they have a separate trade that they are focused
on. Just for blood.
Just blood.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I feel like typically if someone goes missing in this city, it's easy to point your finger at the Vampire Mafia because they're like, well, they probably stole your person to put them in their blood farms or whatever.
But they
can, like, drink them.
Even if they weren't the ones to kidnap them, they probably have a pretty good idea. You know, if somebody went missing, you could go and ask them, and whether it was them that did it or not, mm-hmm. they would have a good idea of where to go.
Yeah.
So, you know, imagine if you're like a paladin or something passing through town and your friend, the ranger goes missing. You would go to the vampire mafia against your better judgment. You know, you'd go and work with these people that are an affront to everything that you stand for as a holy warrior. Mm-hmm. And you would say, I hate that I'm doing this, but I have to work with you to find my friend, to accomplish these goals.
I just had a thought, and this is a little late in the game to amend this, but I'm going to do it anyway. I said that Midnight Jack's was located on the pier.
Yes.
Changing that, it's on an island slightly offshore from this main city.
You have to take a little ferry boat to get out there.
Well, exactly.
That's kind of
that's what helps make it kind of exclusive and cool, is that you have to take the boat out to the island to go to Midnight Jack's, where all this cool stuff happens.
Cool.
Sort of on the island, anything goes. And so that's why I think that's another sort of
Cole
safety
Porter
feature
style.
That he has. Exactly. So if, you know, the human cops are like, we're going to get on all our little cop boats and like and storm the island. He's like, actually, no, you're not. And like the water spirits would like, you know, keep them away. Like you can't get to Midnight Jack's island unless he wants you there.
I really, really like that.
Yeah.
That's okay. Super cool. I don't want to mess with this anymore. This is something I think I definitely want to revisit this.
That'd be cool.
Because this is a really, really cool world that I want to, I think we've expanded beyond the evil lair concept here. I think this whole city
lair
is really interesting to me. I like that it's just sort of like weird, spooky, supernatural New Orleans.
Yeah.
That's really fun. So let's put this down. Let's just walk away, mm-hmm. And maybe give our listeners here an opportunity to expand upon this. If you have any ideas about how to tell some interesting stories in this location or different characters that might come through, what would your party do if they came upon this location? Would they ally themselves with the humans, with the merfolk, with the werewolves, with the vampires, with the fae? Like, where would you guys end up? We would love to hear all about that.
Absolutely.
And if you want to get back to us about any of that, Piper, where can our listeners go to tell us all of their fun stories?
Well, for any of your short, quick ideas, you can send them to us on Twitter. We mm-hmm. are at WorldForgePod at Twitter. You can also send us your very lengthy, complicated, thoughtful ideas at our email, which is WorldForgePod@gmail.com.
Yes, that it is. We've gotten some really fun emails lately. We've gotten a couple. We read Johannes Lova's fun world recently. We got that wonderful, wonderful prompt from D&D Steve that we did an episode about a few weeks ago. We just love hearing about that stuff from you guys. So please keep it coming. It's always so exciting for us to hear about that stuff. So
absolutely.
Go ahead. But I think now, Piper, it's time for us to pop over to
the rec room.
The rec room. Ooh. Here. We've got a couple of cool recommendations this week. I'm going to let you jump in first here because I think you had one that you were kind of excited about sharing.
Yeah. So I think a really good source of inspiration when it comes to looking at different kind of spooky places. Not all
yes.
of them are lairs necessarily, but I recommend either reading the Series of Unfortunate Events book series or checking out the TV show on Netflix, which I think is actually pretty darn
yeah.
good. I haven't finished it yet myself, but I've loved everything that I've seen. That really, the episodic nature of those books, each one takes you to a different kind of cool, spooky location. You're either in a herpetological like lab or you're in this like really demented hospital or this messed up hotel. There's always something spooky, or this like horrible lumber mill. Like every place that they send these poor orphans gets like darker and darker, but cooler and cooler. I read the book as a kid with my dad and I loved it. We actually listened to it as an audiobook, and it was narrated by Tim Curry, which made it like 10 times better.
Oh my God, of course.
Yeah.
It's going to be great. Yeah.
So I'd recommend trying to find the Tim Curry audiobook version or picking it up from your local library. It's definitely an enjoyable read, even for adults. And I kind of plan to revisit it sometime soon myself.
I love that.
Yeah.
That's great. My recommendations this week, I have a few actually. So we talked about Mega Man a little bit, how Dr. Wily's Castle is one of my favorite evil villain lairs. There are a few Mega Man anthologies available on Steam and on the Switch and on a few different consoles for like $15. I think there's two of them and they each have like six or seven games in them. Mega Man games are just, they're classic, fun, good games, and structurally, I think they're really, really cool. I love the idea of fighting through a bunch of enemies and then being confronted with them again with slightly different abilities when you have all of their powers now at your fingertips. I think that's a really, really cool thing.
Absolutely.
I also want to recommend Vampire the Masquerade, which is a really fun, cool series of video games, and there is a tabletop version of it as well that kind of goes into a world that is very similar to this one. It's sort of like, what would it be like if at nighttime all the vampires came out, and they, you know, what do they do at night? The nightlife is sort of dominated by vampires, and how it's this kind of spooky, macabre, gothic sort of world that is, it's only just divorced from our own real world, which I think is a really, really neat thing. I would actually love to run a game in that setting.
That sounds really cool.
It's very, very cool. So a couple of really cool recommendations for you this week. We'll include, of course, links to direct sources for all of those things in the show notes, but yeah, that's what we got for you. So again, that's about it for this week. If you want to reach out to us, we are once again at WorldForgePod on Twitter. You can find us at WorldForgePod@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. And if you really, really are feeling generous, if you want to support the show,
write us a review.
Please consider writing a review. We highly, highly encourage you to. Whatever you're doing right now, just stop. Just stop doing it. It's definitely less important than writing us a review. Go pull over your car. Hang up the phone with your grandma or whatever, and open up your podcast app and just leave us a review right in there. 5 stars and a little comment does so much to help get our show in front of new listeners, and also just makes our day. It makes us very, very happy.
It does.
We love it. It cheers us up when we're having the gloomies. And if we're having a great day, it makes a great day even better. So please consider doing that. It just means a lot to us. But yeah. I think that's about all that we have for you this week.
I think we're good.
Thank you so, so much for tuning in. We'll be back again next week with another really, really fun topic, I'm sure. And we love you all.
We do love you.
Yeah.
Make sure if you have the chance, go check out Spider Skull Island.
Spider Skull Island. We had to squeeze another one of those in, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's so fun to say.
It's really fun.
Okay, bye, listeners.
See you later.